So I'm a little disappointed in myself that I forgot to show the kids my djembe over there in the corner, which is one of my favorite instruments that I kind of sort of learned to play about 15 years ago. It comes from Ghana, Africa. And I wanted to just share a little bit about how music erupts from the human soul in every corner of the earth in myriad ways. And we're going to start. This is called the sermon section. And I'm going to do a little talking, but I want to share some music. And I'm going to share a song I wrote about 15 years ago called One Light, Many Windows. And it kind of erupted from me. And it's got one of those scales that came from someplace else. It's a little bit of a blues scale and a little bit Mideastern. And my keyboard player disappeared.
Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready, yeah. Anthony is such a comforting presence right here next to me. He can play any note on that keyboard in just the right place. And I got Trey Henry on bass and Debbie on the cajon. Hit bang that thing. And Shahid's going to help us on the flute. And I hope you'll enjoy the song and also sing on the chorus if you can kind of figure it out. The choir is going to help us out a little. I'll sing the first chorus solo, and then you all come in as the spirit moves and as we rehearsed. 1, 2, 3, 4. There are many windows with one light shining. Warm from the south, cool from the north, is one light shining. One light, one. Through the stained glass, washes on the floorboard. You see blue, and I see green, but it's one light shining. To say, kitchen table. Evening shade bleeds red and gray. Change our constant staple. Sing with us. Just about enough. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit. We'll go a little over. So I wonder, what are the origins of social exclusion? Is it fight or flight survival instinct? Whatever the source, insider, outsider, exclusionary behavior appears to be a cross-cultural tendency. Fear, or at least wariness, is a useful survival instinct. Yet, just like biodiversity in nature, cultural diversity makes for a healthier community. That's what I think. New ways of doing music, art, science, religion, philosophy can make life richer and more interesting. Human beings have proven to be curious and adaptive creatures, getting to know and work with people from backgrounds different from your own can expand your mind and your soul. I grew up in North Long Beach, Lakewood, in a mostly white community. I didn't understand how it got to be that way, but I learned later on. We were the victims, the beneficiaries, the inheritors of redlining. You know what redlining is? It goes back to the 20s and 30s when our government, in our great New Deal era, developed home insurance or protection for mortgages. And behind the scenes, secretly, the lenders raided areas to be given loans from A to D. And the D areas were marked in red. It said, don't insure these properties. And realtors determined those areas happened to be neighborhoods that were mostly black and areas that were populated during the Great Migration of the early 20th century. And so the realtors, even after those laws were enacted to make that illegal, continued to redline neighborhoods. And that's where I grew up. When I got older, I began to ask questions. How did this come to be? And I began to work in my working life with kids that were Mexican and black and white. And we moved to Pasadena and to earn my way through seminary, I worked as a house painter, paper hanger. Debbie was a waitress. and we managed to get by. And we lived in sort of like the cross area between Altadena and Pasadena. Altadena's been in the news lately, right? A lot. And my customers and my neighbors were white and they were black. And my black customers were record producers. They were plasterers. They were entrepreneurs. They were teachers. And when I got into the 80s and I heard the Reagan administration talking about welfare mothers and how we couldn't give money to folks that were just wanting a handout when the rest of us were working hard, I knew from experience that was a lie. There's criminals in every color and shape, and there's good people in every color and shape. And my customers were good people. Heather McGee wrote a book called The Sum of Us, and she traces the history of how the zero-sum thinking has kind of wrecked our entire society. The idea that if you give benefits and include one group of people, then another group of people is going to be pulled down. In Montgomery, Alabama, there was the biggest public and nicest public pool was the Oak Park swimming pool. And the Supreme Court had ruled that discrimination in housing and in accommodations was illegal. And when a federal court decided that that Oak Park swimming pool in Montgomery, Alabama, and could not be segregated because it was unconstitutional, the city council decided, well, what's the solution? Rather than opening up the pool to their black neighbors, they closed the swimming pool. And all across the country, swimming pools were closed and filled in so that the result was what? Everybody loses. And I had a wonderful story to share with you about the our origins in this country. And we're running out of time, so I'm not going to be able to share with you the whole story, but I'll give you the essence. You're familiar with Plymouth Colony in the founding of Massachusetts, right? It's the basis of our Thanksgiving myth. Well, that was in 1620. And about 4 years later, there's a businessman named Thomas Morton and his partner, Wollaston. You ever heard of him? You should. So Thomas Morton had a different vision. And I'm going to pull up his quote if I can. My iPad's not cooperating. So, Plymouth Colony and the Road Not Taken. So, William Bradford wrote a book on Plymouth Plantation. It's how we got a lot of our information about Plymouth and that famous celebration that we picked up on. How did the Puritans in Holland decide on America? Well, they say they had thoughts on some of those vast, unpeopled countries of America, which are fruitful and fit for habitation, being devoid of all civil inhabitants. where there are only savage and brutish men which range up and down, little otherwise than the beasts of the same. Well, we know the land was not unpeopled, right? And savages, well, calls to mind the kettle and the pot. I mean, these are the people who executed witches, right? So Thomas Morton, born in 1576, Devonshire, England, a part of the country that still bore remnants of merry old England's pagan past. Well-educated, well-connected, and free-thinking. He came to America to make money, and he and his business partner and 30 indentured servants arrived in 1624, just 4 years after the Mayflower. They landed in the future Quincy, Massachusetts, near the Plymouth Colony, and began trading with the Indians for furs. Morton wrote all about it in his New English Canaan. Nathaniel Hawthorne recounted the story, recounted the tale in his story, The Maypole of Marymount. So Morton wrote that he found two sorts of people in New England, the Christians and the infidels. The infidels he found most full of humanity and more friendly than the other. He found he could not get along with the Puritans at Plymouth, so he established his own colony, free of slavery, and called it Marymount. It was a colonial utopia in which the settlers were considered consociates. They lived in harmony with the Algonquin Indians. While the Puritans were horrified that this liberal-minded Morton and his men consorted with native women, they considered him impious and a drunken libertine. So, cutting to the chase, in the spring, Morton set up a maypole, and they danced, and they sang, and they drank. The Puritans were so furious, they came and they cut down the maypole. They chained Morton and sent him back to England. He came back like two more times until finally he was put in prison in Boston and ultimately exiled in Maine when he was an old man. So I can't help but think, what might have been had our forebears, some of whom are biological forebears, some definitely cultural. Every time you value your worth based on your work output, you are exhibiting your Calvinist Puritan inheritance, whether you know it or not. Every time you walk by a property with a fence, you're witnessing, or sign a grant deed, you're witnessing colonial views of land. You know the Woody Guthrie song, "This Land Is Your Land"? You know the verse, "As I was walking on that highway, I saw a sign there that said no trespassing. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me." So I think of Robin Wall Kimmerer and the Honorable Harvest. And what if we saw the land as not something to be exploited, but something to be honored as our relative and shared? Maybe we wouldn't be in the fix we are. So these are just a few of my thoughts I'm going to leave you with, and we're going to close with our final hymn. Yeah, we're going long. I cut my talk way short, but we're still going long. So we're going to wrap up.